A63, number 10A.
We stopped in the middle of the 3,000-year period, and we have seen that that 3,000-year period has a few very clear accent on the term soul, like the naming and renaming of people with a spiritual connotation, renaming God as the I am that I am, renaming of the children of Israel. Then we had another second main point that you mentioned, namely that it is a period of wandering. It's very definite that in those 1,000 years people, the tribes, are constantly wandering around. They come out from Ur and they wander around, they go down to Egypt, come back from Egypt. So Moses leading them out and through the wilderness and over the Jordan until finally they find their homeland and settle. Finally the dry land appears, they found something definite, namely Canaan, and then it's the 3,000-year period ends. So it's a great sense of the wilderness period, and we know Mrs. Eddy defines the wilderness as the vestibule in which the material sense of things disappears and the spiritual sense unfolds the great facts of existence. So you have that terrific sense of wandering really from sense to soul. It's finding one's true identity in soul. You remember when we did the David story last time, that in the third tone of soul, David was constantly wandering around. He was constantly fleeing from Saul. And there too you could see that it was that period where he tried to find his true identity, his true safety in soul. So when one knows the Bible, you know, tone-wise, one always sees, when one reads a part of the Bible, one always sees how these symbols reappear and reappear. And therefore one begins to feel that one really has found the code, the spiritual code that can decode the symbolism of the Bible. Also, in this 3,000-year period, next to the naming and the wandering from sense to soul, the wilderness experience, we have there a very great sense of how to deal with animal magnetism, with malicious animal magnetism. We know that soul deals with malicious animal magnetism, and that Mrs. Eddy's third edition of Science and Health had animal magnetism as demonology, witchcraft, etc. And in that third 1,000-year period, they had to deal with animal magnetism. Just think of Moses and how he dealt with the serpent of Moses, how he dealt with Pharaoh and with the plagues, and had to see through all those various claims of animal magnetism. So I guess this 3,000-year period gives us a very distinct sense of soul, and therefore the ideas of soul. Then we come to the 4,000-year period. From where to where goes the 4,000-year period?
From Saul to Jesus.
From Saul, from King Saul to Jesus, yes. And what is the predominant characteristic of that period? Do they wander around again? Do they have to try not to mix up things or so? Are they interested in creation? Who begets who? What is their great problem from Saul right to Jesus?
Government.
the government, how is it brought out, this kind of government, in this period?
The king.
The king, kingdom period, you see, Saul was the first king. Naturally ended with the real king, with Jesus, the king of the Jews. So we have in that 4,000-year period, the kingdom period, showing the clamoring for a king, then giving Israel a king, then how the kingdom soon afterwards was split up. It only lasted 2 generations of kingship with David and with Solomon, and afterwards the whole kingdom was split apart into a northern kingdom, into a southern kingdom, and you had 2 kingdoms, and then very soon these kingdoms fell under the, you call it suzerainty of Egypt, of other countries under the, how do you call it, suzerainty? When a country, when a king is put under... I said it right, huh? But you didn't know the word, I guess, huh? Yeah. Yeah, okay. You know, meaning that they lost really their authority and their rulership insofar as that they constantly had to pay tribute to foreign kings, pay tribute to the Egyptian kings, to the Babylonian kings, to the Assyrian kings, whoever was around them. They were only puppets, kings in Israel, puppets for this great mighty nation. So that even that kingdom period wasn't actually a real kingdom period. They were just puppets ruling in Israel and in Judah. Then you know how the whole kingdom was destroyed, how they had to go to captivity. First the part went to the Assyrian captivity, then later on Judah had to go into the Babylonian captivity. How they came back, but still actually not being independent kings, always at the mercy of the Persian kings. And so actually Israel never really gained a true sense of kingship. Samuel, you know, wanted that Israel would have no king, that the spiritual idea would govern them, that the prophetic idea of Samuel would govern everyone. But they said, we want a king, we want to be like other nations, we want to have a king. And so Samuel said the same thing as Mrs. Eddy, you can have a king, but if you organize your kingdom, it will fall to pieces. And Samuel seemed to have been in the wrong at the beginning, because the kingdom of David blossomed and the kingdom of Solomon blossomed even more, and that was the end. And the rest of the 1,000-year period, with a duration of over 900 years, was just one big catastrophe. And actually that what the prophet Samuel prophesied, that the kings will just take away everything they have, they make them slaves and warriors, and they have to lose their lives for the kings and so on. All that really happened. So it gives a very good sense of wrong government, but also a very good sense of true government. How was the true government expressed in that period? Yes?
Through David,
yes, as a king, yes. But all through those 1,000 years was another thing at work.
The prophet.
They were at work, and they saw that only the idea would govern. That only if Israel will return to the Lord. Return to the Lord was the one great cry of the prophets, then everything will be okay. Return to the Lord. Return to your principle. Learn your principle. Like Isaiah that said, well, every ass knows his master, and every donkey, or I don't know what, his master's crib. Huh? But Israel does not know. Israel does not consider. So that's how he started his prophecy, showing that what governs a country, that what governs men, is his understanding of God. So that was that great period, the kingdom period and the prophetic period, all bringing out the sense of government, the right sense, the wrong sense of government. Yes. Then we have a 5,000-year period, and that goes from where to, from when to when, includes what, really, that 5,000-year period? Yes? Jesus? It's the beginning?
Up to the end of the Bible.
Up to the end of the Bible, yes? But if there is a 6,000-year period and there is nothing in the Bible, therefore I think we have to extend that line, huh? And see that the 5,000-year period is actually another 1,000-year period up to around about the year 1000 A.D. What is the characteristic of those 1,000 years? Just in the if we take it only in a broad way. Why is this another question? Isn't it that the king has come? Therefore, isn't it also a period of kingship? The king, Jesus, was crucified and was here. Is Jesus the king of the Jews? Isn't it the kingdom period again? No, no. What is it then? Huh? Yes, Jean? Huh?
Well, it's the period when he shows them the purpose for his coming, and he gives them a more abundant life.
That's it, huh? His purpose, huh? Yeah. His great accent was not, I know your king. But he said, I'm come to give you life and to give you abundantly. He introduced, I shouldn't talk, what else do we find in this life of Jesus as a main aspect that has never been touched before, really.
Showing the people the way.
Showing the way, showing the method, huh? The method of life, huh? Yes. What else is here very
from
the healing, huh? Therefore, using really the principle he has learned in order to give newness of life, that was healing, huh? To show that with that power of principle we have life eternal, huh? Resurrecting the dead. For the first time, you see, somebody was showing that life is eternal through this crucifixion. So you have here again quite a few ideas that stand out: the fullness of life, the newness of life, the fatherhood of God. You see, God was suddenly called Father. The Old Testament didn't know God as the Father. Suddenly Jesus called God the Father, showed the fatherhood of God, a fulfilled sense of life, the fullness of life. Yes, therefore its impact as healing. Yes. Is it actually so that Jesus therefore proved life, and that he was only proving the 5,000-year period? I don't think so, huh? He was the one who showed, I can prove to you all seven synonymous terms right now. He could say, ye think it takes a 1,000-year period, you think it takes season, and then you have the harvest. He could see it takes no time. So actually he demonstrated life, truth, and love. He demonstrated all. But for us, it had its accent on life. For mankind, he was that one that that mankind just took out of his whole stature, that aspect of life, because that's all what the world at that moment could swallow. They didn't take so much that he said, "See, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." They didn't take his contribution of truth, the 6,000-year period, nor did they really quite grasp what he proved, namely fulfillment, the day of love, namely his unity, his ascension, his unity with God. So that for the history of the idea, Jesus was considered to have brought the sense of life, but though he himself demonstrated life, truth, and love. What then do we find with the other figures of the New Testament? Jesus only is the figurehead of the four Gospels, but the New Testament is quite long afterwards. You have the Acts of the Apostles, you have the letters of the Apostles, the Epistles you call them, and you have even Apocalypse. What do they represent? Yes?
Revelation. Showed what was to come.
Yes, the Apocalypse would show what is to come, perhaps. Huh? And the others, I guess they were showing that they are actually followers. Huh? That Jesus said, "Follow me," and they did follow. Huh? And so you have the history of the way of life, that you actually, when you follow what Jesus was teaching, that your life is a different life. Paul was showing that it needed a different style of life and a different purpose of life, a different method of life, a different value of life. He has come to show that we should not tread in the old way of life, but that he would be a pioneer in the world to show the new way of life. Yes, but if we consider the whole 1,000-year period, we can see that the New Testament only covers around about 100 years. John the Revelator wrote about the year 1995 AD and died about that time. What about the other 900 years? Huh? Yes?
Well, what's the sense of multiplication?
It spread out, yes. So you have the spreading of Christianity in the second and third 1,000-year period. What else do we have to finish up that 1,000-year period? Well,
the Father
sends. Well, that is certainly what Jesus expressed. Perhaps in America I shouldn't ask for European history of the first 1,000-year period. I wouldn't like you asking me about the American history of the year, of the first 1,000 years after Jesus. I wouldn't know very much about it, except that there were, I guess, Indians here.
The Renaissance, are you talking?
Oh, no. No, no, in the first 1,000-year period you have the Dark Ages, you see. Yeah. You really have again that sense that it started out right, huh? And that it would show that if you don't follow, if you don't be a follower of the right idea, that you lose your vision and that you really sink right back into the Dark Ages. So from the moment that Christianity became an accepted religion, and Constantine the Great accepted Christianity as a state religion around about 330, or around about that time, that finished Christianity as a living religion. Just finished it off. It became institutionalized. It was put under the dictates of an emperor, and then of popes and of monks and of priesthood, and etc. And therefore all dishonesty and corruption entered in, and the whole Christian countries, Europe that was Christianized at that time, just went right down into what we call the Dark Ages. And very little is known, and that is of any worth mentioning in those many, many hundred years. It's the Dark Ages of corruption, where just religion was organized. You have organization of religion, you see. Mrs. Eddy says that life has nothing to do with time and organization. So you have the counterfeit of life that came to the forefront. We come to the 6,000-year period. And the 6,000-year period lasted from where to where? What would you feel from where to where? Last of the 6,000-year period. Beg your pardon?
At the end of 6,000 years?
Ah, yeah, right at the end, huh? But there were another 900 years before, huh? So it is from which year to which year? From 1,000 to 2,000, huh? It covers one of the most interesting periods in the history of the Western world. I always must point out that we are only talking about the Western world. That means about the Judeo-Christian world, not about the Eastern world. What was the main point, just in one few terms, that really characterizes that last 1,000-year period?
Man becomes conscious of himself.
Yes.
The age of science and the dominion that goes with that emerged.
Yes, yes, Mike, yeah.
Characteristic of Western civilization is a motion forward, a dynamism that had never been before in any civilization.
Yes, and what you feel was the reason why it could suddenly move forward? What was the ground of it, the cause of it?
The development of mathematics and science,
yeah,
and technology.
Well, the development of science. Huh? You have right at the beginning, and of freedom, huh? Of freedom in thinking. Huh? So you have right at that period, you have the first universities that were established, and you have the freedom that was given for men to think with the Magna Carta, in 1215, I think it was. You have the universities, people, you see, as a whole, began to be instructed in reading, writing, schooling. You see, everything, the whole preparation was there for mankind to have a knowledge, to get knowledge, in order that they would be able to bring the earth under their domination. So it's it's freedom from ignorance that started out at that time with the first universities in Italy and in southern France. Then that freedom of thinking that was first perhaps a bit dominated by the church, but they began to free themselves from the church domination. And the population as such came out of analphabetism and began to read. When that was ready, you got the printing press and the broadening out of instruction. Huh? Yes.
The climax of the church against science was with Galileo, and after that trial. And no matter what happened to him, it definitely was the keynote going forward. And then you had chemistry, a sense of chemistry taking over from alchemy.
Yes.
It always, in other words, removed it from the realm of magic. It always had, chemistry and magic were always looked on as the same thing. And
yes.
happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So here you have, and you, Michael has gone a bit quicker than I do. You come to the Renaissance, around about 1500, that was a turning point. Science versus the church got its upper hand with Kepler, Galilei, Newton, and then naturally everything was triggered off. The realm was free for free thinking, for free investigation, for the free spirit. Philosophies blossomed, and so on, and so on, and so on. And you come to the present age where we are not only freed from ignorance, but with Christian Science, from the bondage of sin, sickness, and death. So that we are standing at the end of a 6,000-year period, and we feel it in our bones that there is a new 1,000-year period approaching where the accent shifts quite considerably into the 7,000 period of love, into the 7,000-year period of universality, of integrating everything into the one, where the universal sense becomes more important, where the motherhood sense, the womanhood sense becomes more important, where woman takes its place, and so on. We just don't want to go into details. The details can be manifold, and everybody more or less senses it, what happens. So the main point that we want to bring out here is that, again, we can see that we can ask ourselves, was it somebody who had an idea that after a certain period, another period should now be cultured? No. Every period was, so to say, under the impact of the divine idea, and so man could not direct the evolution. He was being forced into a new concept, you see, so that it came upon mankind. The Spirit of God came upon mankind, moved mankind to tackle suddenly a completely new problem in history. All right, as I have said, if I have an hour left, I will go over these periods again with the subtones and take in a bit more detailed information that brings it out even more. But for a first attempt, I think these are the great points that each student should somehow have in his fingertips without looking into any of his notes, that he knows that here we have a great red thread going right through the Bible.